from West Virginia Public Broadcasting.
Support for the legislature today is provided by the following.
West Virginia University, online at wvu.edu.
AARP West Virginia, your ally for real possibilities in the Mountain State. Online at aarp.org/wv. The West Virginia Higher Education Policy Commission, working to double the degrees produced annually in our state by 2025. Through increased opportunities for West Virginians to earn the credentials today's economy demands. The High Technology Foundation, building a stronger West Virginia, online at wvhtf.org.
At the legislature today, Governor Tomlin vetoes two bills named a top priority for the GOP majority. And after hours of debate, delegates approve a religious freedom protection bill. Senators take a second look at an abortion ban declared unconstitutional in another state. And Attorney General Patrick Morrissey joins us to discuss a Supreme Court stay in his case against the Environmental Protection Agency. Those stories coming up on the legislature today. Good evening, I'm Ashton Mara. We begin tonight with news from the executive as Governor Tomlin announces he's vetoed two controversial pieces of legislation. The union-opposed right to work and prevailing wage repeal were both approved by lawmakers late last week. The right to work bill would make it illegal to force an employee to join a union or pay union dues or fees. In a press release, Tomlin said, quote, "The issue of right to work has been discussed for a number of years, but I have never had a company cite right to work as a barrier to relocating to West Virginia. We do not lack prospects. Our issues are best addressed by improving our workforce and creating new development opportunities. I do not believe West Virginia needs a right-to-work law, a law that would lead to little, if any, economic growth and may lower the wages of West Virginia workers." The prevailing wage is the hourly rate of pay and benefits paid on government construction jobs. In his veto message of the repeal, Tomlin said, quote, "Last year, I worked with the legislature to create a compromise on prevailing wage to help local communities by exempting projects less than $500,000 and to improve our state's prevailing wage calculation. These new rates have been in place for less than a year. We need to give this methodology time to work. We don't need to pass bills that lower the wages of West Virginia workers and do little, if anything, to stimulate our economy." House Speaker Tim Armstead called the vetoes disappointing but not surprising. In a written statement, Armstead said he and Senate President Bill Cole expected the actions, and that's why the bills were a priority from the start of the session. It takes only a simple majority vote of each chamber to override the governor's vetoes. Lawmakers in each chamber could take the vetoes up as soon as tomorrow. Members of the House have approved the West Virginia Religious Freedom Restoration Act. Supporters say the bill will increase the scrutiny judges use when deciding cases that challenge government infringement on religious liberties. Those opposed say the measure invites discrimination into the state. Liz McCormick brings us this report from the House floor.
House Bill 4012 is the West Virginia Religious Freedom Restoration Act, commonly called the RFRA bill. It was on third reading today in the House. The bill sets up a judicial test for lawsuits that claim a government entity has violated an individual's religious freedoms and calls on judges to weigh the sincerity of those religious-held beliefs in the claims. 21 other states have enacted RFRA laws in the U.S., and in the last 20 years, only 147 lawsuits under the laws have been tried. House Judiciary Chairman John Schott of Mercer County explained the bill and said this test has been around for a long time.
This cause of action has been in place ever since the U.S. Constitution was adopted and ever since Article 3 of Section 15 of the West Virginia Constitution has been adopted, because those are the predicate for any type of claim that this bill seeks to establish a test to determine whether that claim has merit.
After his explanation, members began to debate the bill. First, we hear from those against it.
I believe I'm the only member of a religious minority elected to this body currently. I'm Jewish. Religious freedom is very important to me. If it wasn't for religious freedom, I wouldn't be here. The religious freedom that we're granted in this country. My family left Eastern Europe over 100 years ago, fleeing real religious persecution. And they came here and they chose to make West Virginia their home. Since that time, in my lifetime, I cannot tell you what religious persecution is because I'm an American. And we do not persecute people in America for their religious beliefs because we have the First Amendment to the Constitution. That's very well written. It works. We have an even stronger protection in our own West Virginia Constitution. It works.
Is my God any different from your all's God? You know, I've been asked about this. And I worship the same God that you guys do. But I realized that I was selling myself out. And every night before I go to bed, I pray with my family. Every night. Every morning. We never leave the house until we tell one another that we love each other. Because we never know whether it's going to be the last moment or not. But when I choose to believe and teach my kids what I want them to learn about love, and I don't believe and subscribe to your religion and your thought process because I'm voting no on this, it's held against me. And I don't think that's right, and I've always made this statement since I've been in here. I was elected by the people of Eastern Kanawha County, and my vote and my morals is never up for sale.
More members spoke against the Religious Freedom Restoration Act than for it. Here are a few of the speeches from those in support of the bill.
In 2012, we passed this bill in the House. Every member that was a member in 2012 and is still here today voted for this bill. What's changed? There seems to be a lot of turmoil about it now. So what has changed between 2012 and 2016? The only thing that has changed is the propaganda surrounding this bill.
None of these hypotheticals of bigotry and hatefulness and discrimination have come true. And our judiciary chairman said how minuscule the number of cases have come before the courts. I think he said 147 in over 20 years. It's not a thing that is abused. It's not a weapon of discrimination. It is a protection for people.
Today, there are many people that think freedom of religion is the same as freedom from religion. That we don't want you to say the Pledge of Allegiance and include under God. That we don't want you to put on your money in God we trust. There are those among us who are intolerant of those of us who hold those beliefs and cherish the connection we have to God and our religion in this country. And it's those people that need to understand that we have rights too. That we have rights, and that first among them is our right to express our religion, not just in church, but wherever we go, and however we live.
House Bill 4012 passed 72-26 and now goes to the Senate for its consideration. For the legislature today, I'm Liz McCormick in the House.
At the end of January, the Kansas Court of Appeals blocked the implementation of a law banning the most commonly used second trimester abortion method. That method, commonly referred to as dismemberment, is now being discussed in the West Virginia State House. The Kansas court ruling, however, has caused the bill's sponsors to rethink some of its provisions.
When Senate Bill 10 was first introduced into the West Virginia legislature, it was almost identical to the Kansas law. The bill proposed would make it illegal to perform a second trimester abortion using the dismemberment method and also set out criminal and civil penalties for doctors who perform such procedures. But some members of the upper chamber had concerns about the legislation after the Kansas court's ruling. So Thursday, the Senate Health Committee considered a version that included some changes. Senator Ryan Ferns is the committee's chair.
In our committee substitute, it's very clear that the procedure is only outlawed if the life of the baby, the unborn baby, is not first terminated.
The new version removes the criminal penalties for doctors who perform these types of abortions to a live fetus, but creates a review process in front of the state medical board, meaning a doctor who breaks the law could have their medical license revoked. As for the procedures themselves, the bill essentially directs doctors to terminate the pregnancy through an injection method that stops the fetus's heart before the dismemberment process. But that's only in elective procedures. In situations where the mother's life is at risk, doctors and patients are permitted to terminate the pregnancy in the manner deemed safest for the mother. Still, Huntington area OBGYN David Jude told the committee that while those types of abortions are rare in West Virginia, they're often the safest option for patients. Jude says the bill could inhibit a doctor and mother from making the best choice at the appropriate time for fear of repercussions.
And in those situations, again, you're asking the physician to make a determination about when's mom's life is in danger. You know, we can't really predict, you know, what is sick enough to consider mom's life to be in immediate danger.
Jude received questions from senators on both sides of the issue, including Republican Senator Chris Walters.
And I know that you're saying the outcome is the same, but, you know, and I can't speak to, you know, pain, any type of receptors or anything right in the baby at that level, but, you know, to tear a limb off until death versus an injection, death, and then taking the fetus out. I mean, understand the end result is the same. It's just try to wrap your mind around what would have to happen in the first versus the latter.
But Democrats like Senator Bob Plymouth supported Jude in his position and expressed concerns about the possible impact on patient care.
We're trying to take everything of the decision-making and your judgment and your training away from you when we're trying to protect the mother's health as well. Do you think that this bill does some of that?
I think it puts mom's health more at risk. It takes decision making away from the physician and the patient. And again, it takes the safest option away from us.
The committee adopted the amended version of the bill, though, on a voice vote, and it will move on to the full Senate. Ferns believes with the amendments, the bill will receive a majority support in the chamber.
We had this bill on the agenda, I believe, a little over a week ago, and then we were about to put it, we had it back on our agenda, but didn't take it up another time. The whole reason for that was to talk with all of our members who had concerns and alleviate all their concerns. So that's the reason for the new committee substitute. We've continued to update and clarify the language in the bill in order to alleviate concerns. So I think there will be little opposition to the bill as it currently stands.
Last year, the Senate voted 29-5 to approve a bill banning abortions after 20 weeks. Since that vote, the chamber has received two new members, both Republicans.
Jeff Mullins represents the state's 9th senatorial district from Raleigh County. He's a Republican and serves as the vice chair of the Senate Confirmations Committee. Tom Fast is a Republican from Fayette County. He was elected to the House of Delegates in 2014 to represent the state's 32nd House District. Kayla Kessinger was elected to the West Virginia House of Delegates in 2014. She's a Republican from Fayette County who represents the 32nd House District. Kessinger is one of the youngest members of the House at 23. Dave Perry is a Democrat from Fayette County. He was elected to represent the 32nd House District in 2000. He currently serves as the minority chair of the Chamber's Education Committee, a committee he served as vice chair of before the Republican majority took over the chamber in 2015.
This week, the United States Supreme Court ordered a stay in a lawsuit challenging the Obama administration's Clean Power Plan. It's a case West Virginia has taken a lead role in since the announcement of those rules last year. Joining us to discuss the latest developments is the head of the state agency challenging the Clean Power Plan, Attorney General Patrick Morrissey. Thank you so much for joining us.
Hey, it's great to be here on your program.
So let's start with an explanation. Sure. I think some people don't really understand what a stay actually means.
No, it's a great question. And this decision this week really was monumental for the Mountain State and really for the entire country, because by obtaining a stay at the U.S. Supreme Court, we've basically frozen this regulation, the president's Clean Power Plan. The reason why that's so important is because we're probably not going to have a decision on the merits of this regulation until next spring at the U.S. Supreme Court. By having a regulation in place, even though we think that it ultimately won't be upheld in court, that puts real pressure on the states and a lot of the utilities to spend a significant amount of money trying to come into compliance. What this says is, let's put a halt on it, let's put our pens down, and let's let the legal process play its way out. And therefore, we won't be putting at risk potentially spending hundreds of millions or billions of dollars for a regulation that's probably not going to get upheld in the courts.
So what comes next in the lawsuit process? Sure. Where does this go for West Virginia and for your office particularly?
Well, our office is leading this 27-state litigation. And right now we're in the process of submitting the legal briefs before the D.C. Circuit. There will be oral argument June 2nd in Washington, D.C. The judges will probably make a decision on the merits in D.C., sometime late in the summer or into the fall. And then my guess is whoever loses this case at the D.C. Circuit will appeal before the U.S. Supreme Court. Then they're going to take in briefs, and there'll be oral arguments next spring. So the value of the stay is it really shifts some of this decision to the next president.
Okay. So do you believe that this, honestly, will make a difference for the industry? We hear lawmakers say every day that the global markets are the reason that both the coal and the natural gas industries are struggling in West Virginia right now. So does this really impact what's happening in West Virginia?
I think it will, but I think people have to understand what the expectation should be. There has been a tremendous amount of carnage, at least in part due to some of the regulations that have come out of Washington. And of course, there are a lot of different factors impacting coal and the layoffs. But clearly, the regulatory environment has been very difficult for West Virginia coal miners and their families. What I'm hoping this big win does is it actually stops some of the blood loss, and that we can actually say, okay, there's now hope on the horizon, and we can begin to fix this, because this administration has been pushing this illegal regulation, and now we have a chance to say, wait a minute, this is actually not going to see the light of day. We're eventually going to prevail. And what that means is maybe there'll be an opportunity for capital to flow back into the state. And then maybe if people are thinking of laying folks off because of the terrible regulatory environment or there's too much coal on the ground, people say, well, you know what? Now there's a big victory that we have. Let's hold on a little bit because brighter days are in front of us.
Let's move on to another issue. Right now, lawmakers have already approved. It's been approved in both the House and Senate, and it's before the governor.
Sure.
A bill to codify some policy in your office, the way you all hire outside counsel.
Yes.
Can you explain that bill to us?
Absolutely. Well, this is just a terrific reform that I instituted in the office beginning in 2013. And as people may recall, back in 2012, I thought that it was really important to change how outside counsel were hired in the state, to give the process more transparency. So that way, when the state needs the use of outside counsel, we're going to put it up on the website. We're going to let everyone know that the state intends to hire for legal services. And then we put it out for a bid. And then based upon the bids that come back in, we review them based on both quality and price. And then we pick a winner. And that's critical because, number one, the outside world gets to see all the things that we're doing when we need outside counsel. And two, the state saves money. Since I've put this policy in place beginning in July of 2013, we've saved at least $4.3 million. Now, there's still always going to be some exceptions to the policy. If the state needs emergency legal services, or if there's someone that's been in place for a long time and they can do it much cheaper. But the goal is to increase transparency, foster more competition, and save money. This has been a great policy for the state, and I want to make sure that we lock it in place for future attorneys general, because I'm not always going to be in this office.
Well, Senator Charlie Trump, the head of the Senate Judiciary Committee, in his floor speech said much of the same, that this is about preserving savings into the future. There was a Gazette Mail article that came out last month, though, that said you paid an outside firm $600,000 more than your policy would have allowed. I want to let you respond to that article.
That's great. No, because that was a very misleading article. And what ended up happening is that we've insisted that we have a cap on fees for all the outside counsel, but we don't have full control of some of the lawyers that were hired prior to me taking office in 2013. So that was a contract that was put in place before I took office. And second, we petitioned the judge to limit the fees, and the judge overruled us. So unfortunately, we can't just overrule the judge because otherwise we would be in contempt of court. So we had to honor the judge. So I fought really hard to put our policy in place. The court said no, unfortunately. But that's one of the reasons why we so desperately need to codify this policy so that we can lock it in place for future attorneys general. So it was a really misleading article, unfortunately. But, you know, if anyone has questions, we're happy to answer it because we insist on ensuring that the state saves a lot of money in the process. And I'm really proud of our policy.
There was one senator who spoke on the floor, Senator Ron Miller from Greenbrier County. He spoke against this bill, and he said, I'm only voting against this because I take issue with codifying somebody's policy. Right. That should just stay a policy. What's your response to him?
Well, I think that you should look at what the policy is and decide whether that should be in place for future attorneys general. This is a good government policy. It promotes transparency. It saves the state money. The fact that we've been able to save at least $4.3 million over a 2.5-year period, I think that those are savings that future attorneys general should generate as well. And the public should be pleased that I'm trying to pay lawyers less than what they were paid in the past. That's good for the state of West Virginia. And I know that some people would like even more flexibility. But at the end of the day, the public deserves more transparency, and they deserve cost savings and competition.
Attorney General Patrick Morrissey, thank you so much.
Hey, thanks for having me on your program.
Of course. The West Virginia Senate lost a beloved member over the summer. He might not have been an official elected member of the body, but Tony Gallo served the Senate as its doorkeeper for five sessions. Tonight, we meet the man attempting to fill Mr. Gallo's shoes, Senate doorkeeper Jeff Branham.
My name is Jeffrey Branham. They call me Jeff. I'm the head doorkeeper this year for the West Virginia State Senate. I was born in Charleston. Grew up actually in a little town in Boone County, Whitesville, West Virginia. I'm really good friends with Senator Gonch, Ed Gonch. He's a family friend, and we attend the same church. I've always been one that, even when I was with the steel company for 30 years, I always looked at the job ads and classifieds, and so I noticed there was one for a proofreader this year for the Senate. I was thinking about applying, and I saw Senator Gonch at church, and I mentioned that to him. Senator Gonch said, I don't think you want to do that. I think you probably are more qualified to be a doorkeeper. When I found out I got the job as head doorkeeper, I was, first of all, excited, very much looking forward to learning the process, getting an opportunity to meet new people, and, you know, just anxious to get started, basically. If there are groups that are coming in a particular day for a resolution or a photo opportunity, I monitor them and kind of explain to them what's going to happen and how the process works and when they are to come in and where they go and so forth. And really just to protect all the general parts of the Senate chamber, both inside and outside. The things I like about being part of the process of the legislature is you're exposed and you get to hear and be a part of what's going on. New laws, new discussions, new methods and philosophies that we will use to go forward. And even though I might not be a lawmaker per se, I feel to be a bigger part of that just by being here.
West Virginia venison is now on the shelves of several grocery stores and on the tables of a few restaurants across the state as well, some 8 months after a bill to allow deer farming has taken effect. Tomorrow on our show, State Agriculture Commissioner Walt Helmick will join us to discuss the progress of the program, as well as the pieces of legislation he's tracking in the State House. As we mentioned at the top of the show, Governor Tomlin announced he's vetoed two pieces of legislation, a bill to make West Virginia a right-to-work state and another to repeal the prevailing wage. It's possible members of both chambers could take up those vetoes as soon as tomorrow for overrides. If so, you can watch the decision live on the West Virginia Channel tomorrow morning at 11. You can also watch on our website, wvpublic.org. For now, this has been the Legislature Today. I'm Ashton Mara. Thanks for joining us.
Support for the Legislature Today is provided by the following.
West Virginia University, online at wvu.edu.
AARP West Virginia, your ally for real possibilities in the Mountain State. Online at aarp.org/wv. The West Virginia Higher Education Policy Commission, working to double the degrees produced annually in our state by 2025. Through increased opportunities for West Virginians to earn the credentials today's economy demands. The High Technology Foundation, building a stronger West Virginia. Online at wvhtf.org.
From West Virginia Public Broadcasting.